being actively involved in going on commitments. And I work in the Salem, New Hampshire area, and I see him at a noontime meeting quite frequently. And he came and spoke for us Monday night in Peterborough.
I'm going to call every morning my wife, and you promised me you were going to stop drinking. You lied. Well, I said I promised I'd stop drinking. I didn't say I promised I didn't lie. I got here at the age of 33, just about 30, the age of 34. And I wondered what really happened to me. I was born in a little town in Nova Scotia, and I grew up with a mother and two sisters and a brother, and I was never asked to excel. And then I went to grade school. I went to the Little Sisters of the Hill for 12 years. Then I went to the Jesuit for 4 years and had a little therapy for 5 more years. My life breaks down. But anyway, I remember in the early grades, when I got to 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, actually maybe it was 50. And I remember my mother, she was a cook in a restaurant, she kind of did the best she could, it was in the 30s, early 30s. And all she asked me was, did I pass? The grade. I was like 51 and a half. And she was so proud of me that I passed. But I wasn't in Iowa school because I was moving on with the people I was with. But I remember with guys like 98 and 99, and they were, I didn't have time for that stuff. I was busy playing the sports and getting into trouble and all that kind of stuff. But I went on to college and 60 was passing grade, so I had to step it up a slot, And I was in the 325 in freshman year, and I was about 324 on the list of academic achievements. It wasn't important to me. I was having life was full of fun. I started to drink there. I won't bore you with the details of my drinking, but I was in total denial for a long, long time that anything was wrong. I heard a little story about denial. This guy who was a real badass guy all his life decided at the age of 70 that he wanted to clean up his act and go to the motorcycle session. And he got down to the church and it was packed. And he waited for the last person to go out him. And he knelt down. And he had written down all his bad stuff. Took him 4 days to write it all down for all the bad stuff he had done. When he got in there, he got very nervous. And he slid open and he said, "Bless your father for I've sinned and repented. How long since your last confession?" The guy said, 30 years. 30 years. And the priest said, "What sins have you committed in that 30 years? There was a long pause. And he said, "I ate meat on Friday." And the priest said, "And what else?" He said, "Mashed potatoes and peas." Well, that was the sort of the denial I lived in. Nothing I did was too long, but when I found out I was coming today as a result of a couple of guys come to my house, my big cry, like the cry of every alcoholic, is, "You don't understand. I really don't understand. If you only knew what was on inside of me, you'd understand why I died." That I was hooked on alcohol at the age of 25 and I couldn't get off it. I couldn't get away from it. It did everything for me that I didn't have as a child. It allowed me to do a lot of things. And I remember early on in my alcoholism, I went to work for a famous all-American institution called Household Finance. And at that time, there was a song out there, I think Jim Reeves used to sing it, was Put Your Sweet Lips a Little Closer to the Phone. And I used to call people up at night. I'd be half drunk on the phone. And I used to call and say, put your sweet lips a little closer to the phone. This is Household Finance calling about your loan. And I thought, you know, I didn't think much of that stuff. We were all sitting around having beers and calling people we couldn't see during the day. And I thought chased people back in those days. I didn't understand about money and how you can get into deep debt and all that stuff. I was just fresh out of school, and I thought people had a hell of a nerve to spend a $34 payment on food. I couldn't understand that. Houses were not numbered back in those days, so you went down the street where they lived, and you see a big dog chained to the side of the veranda and the screen door falling off and the grass that high on the front lawn. That was the house. And you'd always, you know, have to drag the woman or the guy down to the office to see the manager. I had no car. I picked him on the streetcar. And it was a lousy job. I was getting $37.50 a week. Had to dress up every day, you know. But I graduated out of that. I left there after about 3.5 years. I was manager of an office, and I met a girl. I thought if I got married, everything would be okay. And I got married, and she had a lot of direction and discipline in her life. But that was going to take care of my lack of that. So, but it didn't. We got married. I was 27 years old when I got married. And between the time, just around Christmas time, I got a new job at a trust company as a mortgage officer. I started to get heavy, real heady with those guys. They were all lawyers. And we would sit around afterwards, and the day's accomplishment, the failures, whatever they were, we drank. And I was good on Saturday morning to be drinking. I lied about what I started to lie pretty early on in my drinking. Lying was a thing that just flowed right off my lips. And started to have children, by the way. The company bought me a house. I hate to tell you what I paid for it back then. A brand new home I paid was $7,200 for a house. I went down and bought a new Chevrolet that afternoon. I did 1,700 bucks for it. I'm on top of the world. I got a new job, a new home, and a car, but I'm drinking. And from that point on, my wife and I thought about alcohol, how much I drank. And she had a great family. They were all musical. We'd go home on the weekends and play cards and sing, and everybody was drinking. So I didn't think I was much worse than any of them. So. But anyway, I left that job. I was there 3 years, and I left the job because I was afraid of, not of a job, I could handle it. I was stupid. I was just, couldn't handle things well. As the guy said, I'd love to talk about procrastination, but I think I'll put it off till tomorrow. Thinking I have it. Nothing would be done today. We'll take care of that tomorrow. I'll come in Saturday morning and do that. And as a result of that, a lot of things happened. I got afraid. I left the job. And for a guy with no discipline or direction in my life, I went to work for myself. Keep your own time, just you got to work in the new prep. So anyway, I was hooked up to three companies that I was selling office equipment for. And luckily, I was on the right side of politics. I was on the paper that's listed to get copies of stuff. Send to school 50 chairs or 30 typewriters or some ad machines or whatever they were at that time. And I would walk around with those things in my pocket for weeks at a time. They'd be screaming for the stuff. And I was getting 30% commission on work, and I was getting 40% commission with a 30% commission on everything else. So good money wasn't a problem. But over a period of time, I kind of got my money and the company's money kind of mixed up. But I didn't think there was much sense to both of us worrying about it. So I allowed them to do all the work, and I just went on my merry way. I suppose that within a mile of where we are right now, There's a couple look at other children saying, I can't take this anymore. I can't handle this. And that happened to me. My wife took the kids, went home to her mother. Now I'm sitting down there. Here I am, the kick of the parish, right? Closest guy in the world. Here I am, I'm alone now. But I needed the most to just abandon me. The company came down on the following Tuesday. I lost my home. I lost my car. I lost a little bit of business I had. But the most important thing I lost was my integrity. You live in a small town, you can't get credit, you can't write a check. You become a bum in your own hometown. And I remember one time, I'm sitting at home, I'm half drunk, looking at old college yearbooks, wondering what the hell happened to me. And the phone rang, it was a bank manager calling me, telling me I had an overdraft. I said, listen, you call me once more about this, and I'm going to transfer my account to another bank. And I'll do that first thing in the morning. To the arrogance of the alcoholic. I didn't have money for gas. But I'm telling him what I'm going to do with my overdraft at the bank. Well, I was, as I say, I was 34, right? I have a sister who's got all kinds of money. And she still has it. But she wasn't silly enough to give it to me. And I used to beg her for money. I really did. And I couldn't understand why she wouldn't give it to me. And I straightened her ass right up. I didn't speak to her for 15 years. Uh-huh. And didn't bother her a bit. Her life went on. Stay up like your life without my wonderful devotion. I've had a hard time. I don't know where the hell to turn. Where do you go when you're in a small town? You lost everything. And you don't have anything. You don't know where to turn. And everybody's saying, well, Johnny said, you're going to have your guts, your backbone, you quit. What's the problem? I got sober cold turkey. And it was the hardest time of my life, I guess. Maybe I have some hard times coming up. I don't know, but up till today, but the hardest time I've ever had. Two guys came to my house one Sunday night. I was drinking, looking at the old college yearbook again. My whole life flowed. Where do I go wrong? You know, that sort of thing. And I have potential. I'm smart and all that thing. Why am I here? Why are other people were lucky they had money and, you know, all that stuff. They said, would you like to stop drinking? I said, yeah. He said, would you like to stop today? I said, hey. Don't shock me like this. That's part of my system. What are we in the day for? I really don't know. So I started going to AA meetings down there, and really, it was such a mishmash to me. I didn't know what the hell was on. Everybody was glad I was there. And I wasn't glad I was there. Everybody else was glad. And we started running around the meetings 60 miles, 70 miles, and there weren't many meetings left. And I called my wife, she came back. I was sober 4 months. And I knew I had to get out of there. I had to get out of that town. I really did. And she said to take a box of raw spaghetti and break it right off. That's what I did. I took what little I had. I had a little business on the side. I'm not going to tell you what it was. Statute of limitations and went out of that. I had a little business. And I sold it to my brother-in-law. I didn't get much for it. And I went down up one side of the street and down the other. I paid my bills and I had $400 left. And I had bus tickets and I took the bus from there to Kenmore Square in Boston. I don't know if it's 10 or 4 or whatever the bus terminal was, anyway, Stewart Street, I don't know. I had three kids and a wife and a suitcase, it's about $400. And I came to Boston, and I'm scared of that. I didn't know the area, I didn't know anybody here. I got a job, I got a company Watertown, Mass, I found a place, put a deposit in an apartment. I went over to the Roxbury and picked up the used furniture, rent a car, you know, do whatever you have to do. And I got a job with a bank. And I repossessed cars for 3.5 years. And if there's anybody out there contemplating the future in that business, let somebody else do it for you. I've been beat up, shot at, dogs chased my ass. I've had guys say to me, take my wife and leave my car. Leave my car, leave that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, what a life. How to get so old? I had to try to eat every day. I was so sick. I mean, you were a sick body with a sick mind. The whole trying to get back on life, trying to get back into the swing of business, and all these young smart guys go to school and they don't teach you. It was just such a problem for me at the time. And one day they called me in the bank, they did a lot of lending experience with finance companies. So at that time, MasterCard, it was the Bank of America, they were looking for people with experience. So. My first bad experience was a guy in AA. We used to meet at lunch from downtown at the post office every day. This guy was having problems with his money. Mm-hmm. I said, no problem. Come see me. So he'd come up one day and he's 25 years at the post office and, you know, no skip hazard and all that stuff, you know.
Must be jealous.
So I didn't know that he didn't retire and had a new girlfriend. I gave him $4,000. And as he was leaving, he said, I don't know how I can ever repay you. I've never laid eyes on this man. He got a new girlfriend, he had divorced his wife, quit his job, and went to California, I guess. He was California, so. It wasn't my money, that was a ridiculous thing. But, I'll tell you that. I never grew up as a kid. I just got called. That's my whole story. I kind of got called, and I was just a big, overgrown kid. I used to say, probably you don't recognize me anymore. I used to wear glasses, getting very bald, and I'm very fat. But this is who I am today. But I really kind of grew up in here. I began to realize that whatever life dealt me was a story I had to deal with. I'm an alcoholic, I can't drink. It makes your world very, very small. You don't get to come from other places when you don't drink. You're not invited to a lot of places. You know. I deal with people who are heavy drinkers. Not on a face-to-face basis, but in the business I'm in. And I go to a lot of conventions and that. So I left the bank and I went to work for a company I worked for 27 years and I traveled all over the United States. One of those jobs you read about. Good pay, company car, expense account, no heavy lifting. I'm going to apply for that job. And that's the way it worked out. Good job, I loved it. Loved every day. Had fun. Was good at it. I didn't think I was good at anything, but I was good at that. They loved me. Just paying them the money, but put them work. Nice job. But I traveled all over the country, California, everywhere. Lived in California for 7 years. And I used to work in the alcoholic ward at the Los Angeles General Hospital. And I began to understand that alcoholism does to families. But the kids come home, they say, what's daddy coming home? Well, daddy can't go home. Why? Daddy can't function in society. He can't do the things that other daddies do. He's sick. When's mommy coming home? Mommy can't go home. She's too sick to operate in life, in society. You just can't do it. I began to understand that the alcohol tears families apart. More than anything in the world, money, drugs, whatever, alcohol is what is worse. It is terrible. One, and I don't know what happens when two people in the house are drinking. But I understood. I began to understand that. And the depth of the problem in the country, you know, how much of this is going on. I see guys in my company disintegrate within the company. They get finally get fired. The company was doing everything. Smart guy? Sure. What smarter than I was? I didn't want to go to the age. I'm not doing anything about it. It was terrible. Really terrible. I used to say, you know, in this situation, a lesser man would have crumbled, but here I am, you know. But I didn't know that I could handle situations that used to baffle me. I began to understand that there's limitations to what I can do and what I can't do, and I've been paid for big jobs. I'd like to tell you that I became the chairman of CEO of American Express. I'm just a working stiff, that's all, and I'm still working. I'm 77 years old and I'm still working. Now, there's something wrong with that situation. I don't know how it is, but it's wrong. Well, I moved back to California, and I look for any luck details, but I moved back to California. Let me know how. I moved 17 times in 23 years. And was it all my fault? No. Was it all my wife's fault? No, but we moved. And it was a devastating job in the family. And that's the way it was. I got divorced in 1974. I lived alone for 14 years. I was looking for a very rich widow with a bad car. Wound up with a widow with two little kids. They didn't have too much of it. That's why I'm working a 70-year-old. I retired in 1989 on Friday. I went to work for another company on Monday. You know, business I'm in, I work for as a consultant one of the largest banks in the country. And I don't think they have a copy of my resume. Great job, really. And I love it, and they like me, and we get along great. And just one of them, no heavy, my muscles are so relaxed now, no heavy lifts. Life is pretty good. Life's pretty good. If you're new here and you haven't stolen, or lied, or cheated, you keep drinking. All these things will happen to you. All these things will happen to you, and worse. Jails are full of guys who are nice guys. Jails are full of people who are smart. I have nothing to do with it. Don't you fucking alcohol. They will take you anywhere you want to take you. And I know that for a fact. I've seen good friends of mine who came here and I had one guy, I met him at Dolphin Bonus one day. I said, I haven't seen you today. I went to 5 meetings, didn't do a goddamn thing for him. 5 whole meetings. How long did you spend? 25 years? Didn't straighten me out, 5 whole meetings, boy. It worked for me. That's how it happens sometimes. And I do feel kind of bad sometimes when somebody's forced to go to courts and that there. No shame in that, but it's too bad that that's the way it has to be. But somebody has recognized that they have a problem, or are going to cause an awful problem on the highways or whatever. And they're taking steps to see if they can introduce them to some program that would maybe save their life. And most of the time, it's resentment. I can't wait to get the paper signed to get out of here. I'll be so happy. And I remember early on in my sobriety that beating became a pain in the ass. Yeah. You and your ass feel about that sick after a meeting, huh? I found out that this was over time, not overnight. It wasn't happening overnight. And in everybody's talk that I heard, there was some little thing in there that kept me sober another day. That's where the serenity and the quality of your life begins. I was to Bill Wilson's 25th anniversary in New York, and I met with him, and he was talking about the quality of your life, the most important ingredient that you can think about. It isn't money, it isn't jobs, it isn't all those things. How you feel about yourself. It took me a long time to understand that, but that was an important person to think to me. I'm no good to anybody else in that way. I can do all the things anybody else can do. Not as well, maybe, but I can do them if I don't drink. Life's been pretty good to me. And I came here a long time ago, over 42 years ago. And I think, as I say, I kind of grew up here. Learned a lot, heard a lot of people, seen a lot of people come and go, and you wonder what happened to them. That's the way it is. Some say it's a play of the senses. I'm not a gambler and such. I lived in the town where Rockingham Park is. I never knew a horse race. In fact, the last horse I bet on was arrested for loitering in the home stretch. That's the kind of a life I led. I really thought, in my life of truth, I really thought that life was over when I died.
I like it, Joe.
What will people think?
Yeah.
I spoke at Walpole State Prison when I was 6 months older, and I was so proud of myself. I had a big and fat, more glass involved in. And I stood up and said, "You may not believe this, but I've been sober 6 months." And some guy way over in the corner thought, "Who cares?" I hope they put him in for another 30 years. The truth is, a lot of people don't care whether I drink. There's a billion Chinese over there who don't even know who I am. They could care less if I drink or not. And I've seen people say, "You're going to tell the truth, but I don't care." I care. It's the only life I'm ever going to have. Only one. And I liken my life to a football game. 14 minutes and 11 seconds left in the fourth quarter. And you know what they say when those 14 minutes and 11 seconds they expire? It's game over. And that's the way it's going to be someday. So I don't know about you, but I like this life. There's nothing about it that I find offensive. It's always been for my good. That God said, "Enjoy life." I was meant to be happy. I was a happy kid, and I became so introverted through alcohol that I just always think about it myself. And there are other people to be concerned about in family. But anyway, I married it again. My wife is 17 years younger than I am. And I called my brother and told him about it. He said, 17 years younger. I could be fatal for it. I said, "If she died, she died." That was quite loud. And,
Goody, yeah.
He had 17 years and he's the best year of my life. He's really the best year of my life. I'm on the way, I'm on my limitations, and that's it. Life's pretty good. And it can be good for you too.
Did you forget something?